Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast, sponsored by WebSpy. It's February the 16th, 2010, and this is episode 234. Today, I'm bringing you a quick update on the camera and photo imaging show that I visited in Yokohama on Saturday, March the 13th, 2010. Before we jump into that, I'd like to say a big thank you to our sponsors, WebSpy. And I want to remind you that WebSpy are currently giving away 100 one-year subscriptions for their upcoming new product, WebSpy Soho. They're also giving away one pair of Bang & Olufsen earphones. All you have to do to be in with a chance of winning is register your interest in the product and tweet the message about the giveaway on Twitter. You can find details at webspy.com/blogs, and I'll put a direct link to that post on the blog into the show notes for today's episode. This year marked the start of a new event, the Camera and Photo Imaging Show at the Pacifico Yokohama Exhibition Hall. I can see from the updated website, which is at cpplus.jp, that they had around 41,000 visitors over the 4 days of the event, which is, I guess, not too bad for a new show. The day I visited, March 13th, had the most visitors, which is almost 13,000. And it wasn't particularly crowded when I was there, but I left just after noon for some of the Canon video seminars nearby that I'll talk about later. So maybe it was a little bit more busy in the afternoon, but when I was there, it wasn't particularly crowded. The show was free to attend if you registered in advance, and I arrived just as they opened at 10 a.m. I'll be illustrating today's podcast with some images that I shot both with my 1D Mark IV and with the camera on my iPhone. They are visible in the enhanced podcast or iTunes, but not in my gallery as I often do. If you want to view the images online, please take a look at my blog where I'll also publish the transcript. And there's a link to it into the, you know, over to the blog in the show notes, or just search for episode 234 at blog.martinbaileyphotography.com. I shot my images with my iPhone so that I could upload to Twitter as I went around the show. If you don't already follow me on Twitter and would be interested in these kind of updates, please do follow me. My name is just obviously Martin Bailey, no space, so twitter.com/martinbailey. And, you know, the thing is, I rarely announce that I'm going to be doing this sort of thing beforehand. And, it's often pretty spontaneous. So I won't be telling you here the previous week, put it that way. So if you're interested in this sort of updates, do follow me on Twitter. I chose the 1D Mark IV as my DSLR because I wanted to get the good high quality ISO or high quality images with high ISOs. And I also knew that I wasn't going to need the highest resolution possible, because the main reason for these images was to post to the blog or to the website. As I entered the hall, the first stall to my right was the Epson stand, and then in front of that was the huge Canon stand. Although Epson were the closest, the Canon stand was the first to sort of come into sight. I got the distinct feeling that Canon put a lot into this show. I tweeted an iPhone image of part of this stand with all of the big white lenses that Canon usually lines up for people to look through. And we can see from the image that they were also making a point of their 50 millionth EF lens sale from 1987 to 2009. Which reminds me, I pick up my new 70-200 f2.8 version 2 lens, hopefully this coming Friday, the 19th of March. And if possible, I'll be reviewing this lens in comparison to the old version in next week's podcast and blog post, so stay tuned for that if you're interested. As you can see from the next picture, Canon also put on their usual slew of models for people to shoot, using their own camera or the ones provided. It's probably no surprise that the big gun white lenses are also pointing this way. There was also an area behind the stand, like an L shape, surrounding the two areas that I just showed you, where Canon was showing their cameras and printers. They had the new IPF 6350 and the IPF 6300 24-inch printers on display. And I'm still very interested in this format to enable me to do my own large prints. But as I mentioned last year, or maybe the year before, I have to move apartments first, and that is taking me much longer than expected. It was nice to see some large prints, though, actually, you know, large prints on the wall, including canvases that Canon had done with their wide roll paper printers. Being a fan of the large print, it got me, you know, all the more fired up about wanting to move and get myself one of these big printers. I asked one of the Canon reps as well if they had any intention to remove the silly borders that they enforce on the user when printing to their fine art papers from the Pro 9500 printer series, and he didn't have a clue. He didn't really recognize what I was, he didn't, you know, cotton on to what I was talking about until I explained it to him in detail. And, you know, it's kind of expected that he didn't have a clue. I told them, though, that I'd provided the photography community with a workaround, which has been pretty popular, and that Canon are probably losing at least some sales because of this restriction. And he politely thanked me for the feedback. And, of course, you know, I know that he'll forget it the moment I walk away. But I feel that I've got, like, a moral duty to tell Canon that this is a very silly idea whenever I get the chance. From the front of the Canon stand as you face it, if you swung around to your left, you could see the Olympus stand, and they were, of course, pushing the new pen camera. And then after that, there was the Nikon stand. And probably about, you know, it was probably about two-thirds of the size of the Canon stand, and with slightly less prominent position, Nikon didn't seem quite as willing to invest in the event. And I'm not saying that is a bad thing. You know, it's a new event, and, you know, Nikon maybe just don't need to invest that much. So there's definitely no, you know, it's difficult to know how to read this. As we can see from the pretty bad iPhone image that I shot here, instead of models revolving slowly on a merry-go-round, Nikon put on a colorful bush-like flower arrangement for their visitors. And I actually shot this, you know, flower arrangement with one of the DSLRs that they had on display, and it was great for seeing how well the LCD displayed the colors, and, you know, in turn, of course, how well the camera had captured the colors. So I don't really want to make fun of this. They obviously put a lot of thought into, you know, into what they were going to do here, and it certainly came across as being just slightly I don't know, it did come across as being a bit of a cheapskate compared to the Canon stand, though. Right in front of the Nikon stand was the Jitsu and Manfrotto stand. This was actually a small island with Jitsu and Manfrotto on one side, and then Kata camera bags on the other side. I was disappointed again in the reply from the Jitsu rep when I asked if there was anywhere in Japan that I could get the zips on my Jitsu jacket replaced because they'd keep jamming, and he didn't have a clue. I've been planning to buy a Manfrotto fluid head for a while, though, and found the Manfrotto rep was very helpful. He knew roughly what weight each of their fluid heads would support, and I thought it was great when he was able to just simply walk me through to the Jitsu room next to theirs and explain exactly what I would need to mount their 519 fluid head for video to a Jitsu tripod. He told me that, you know, I'd need a 75mm bowl adapter and a systematic tripod. And when I got home, it made it very easy for me to find what I needed on B&H. And so full marks to Manfrotto here. After this, I went around the other side of the stand and found the Kata camera bag people. I'd heard a lot of good things about the Qatar bags, and so I decided to take a closer look and was greeted by a helpful rep called Belina. I had my Zoom H2 digital recorder with me, and although there isn't much point in me recording conversations in Japanese for this podcast, because Belina spoke English, after speaking for a while, we decided to record a quick interview. So I'm going to insert that here, and then we'll come back and I'll talk a little more about my impressions of the Qatar camera bag line of products.
Okay, I'm here at the Qatar store with Belina, and I've just been shown a number of excellent Qatar bags, and I thought we'd just record a quick segment to introduce them to you. So thank you very much for your time, Belina.
You're very welcome.
Do you want to show us some of your new bags that are coming out in the coming month?
Sure. Basically, Qatar has always been about protection and lightweight and ergonomics. Because we come from a military background, we understand that the most important thing within the photography world is not the gear, but the photographer.
Yeah.
So we design our bags around the photographer.
I see.
Coming out with three new collections where the focus is lightweight protection.
I see.
And they're going to be called the Ultralight, the Pro-Light, and the D-Light collections.
Mm.
And you'll be able to decide, do you want a D-Light bag, which gives you room for your basic camera gear and all the rest of the stuff that you carry with you on a daily basis. If you go for the Pro-Light, you're a pro looking for all the professional working details that we give. And Ultralight is our top of the line, no compromises.
I see.
The best of the best, most ergonomic, lightest bag out there.
I see.
Now we're actually standing behind our lightest weight protection motif by premising that if you find a lighter bag out there that's more protective,
yeah,
we'll give you your money back.
Wow, that's nice.
That's something that I think nobody else can do. And in designing these bags, we made sure to always compare to our other bags,
yep,
and of course to all the other competitor bags out there, to make sure that we are really given the lightest, most protective option out there.
Well, looking at them, they're definitely, I can tell that you've made them, the rubber that you're using. I mean, what's this called? Is this, do you have a name for this rubber? Or?
Well, it's injected rubber.
I see.
We call these the Gecko shoulder straps.
Yeah.
They're formed to the body shape.
Yeah.
Because they're injected rubber and not sewn textile, we can make areas much thicker. So where it's on your shoulder, it's going to be thicker and softer.
I see.
And then it tapers down and becomes more rigid.
I see that.
Where it needs to be.
Yeah.
The shape of our harnesses fit male and female forms, so that these are very comfortable also for female users.
Mm.
If you look at all the structure, you see very cutting-edge ergonomics. If it's the aluminium frame, that gives you a three-dimensional back with mesh ventilation. Of course, it also fits your shape perfectly and transfers the weight from your shoulders to your waist.
I see.
It's in the waist belt.
I see.
Waist belt. We have a clinch clasp sternum strap that can be easily adjusted to your height. And we're thinking all the time of how to make really the most comfortable interface with the user's body.
Yeah.
Of course, we also always think of how are you going to get to your camera very fast, what are your primary accessories you're going to be using.
Mm.
So you have to be very quick at getting to your camera first and then your extra lenses.
Well, that sling bag that you were showing me earlier, that the way you were spinning that around your body and just sort of rearranging the straps, it's very impressive.
Well, our 3-in-1 is actually the first sling backpack in the market. It's being copied now. We came out 2 years ago with this, and we see that all our competitors have thought, oh, yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
It's a category that nobody had. Everybody had backpacks and slings, but nobody had a sling backpack until we invented ours.
Very, very fast access to your gear. I'm impressed. So I see that this one has laptop. You've got a laptop mark on there.
Actually, on almost all our backpacks, even our little sling bags, we always have a version with and without a laptop.
I see.
And of course, depending on the size, we always try to fit up to 17-inch laptops. But these days, even our very, very micro or compact backpacks have a laptop sling because of the little netbooks that are very popular.
So that's amazing. So
even
how
if
much
you're not carrying a laptop, you can always put something else in there, magazines, notebooks.
Sure. How much gear would you get in one of these, like camera gear as well? Say you get a laptop in there.
You get a laptop it all depends. But let's say one of our bigger backpacks, you'll get two full camera kits set up with lenses attached, usually one 200mm lens and one standard lens.
Mm.
And along the way, you'd get anywhere between 4 to 12 lenses in.
Mm, I see.
With all the other accessories that you're taking with you. And there's always room also for your wallet and passport and travel documents or in the ones that are really camera plus, you've got room for a jacket, a thermos, sandwiches, whatever you need.
Yeah, everyone you've shown me, you've sort of, you've spun it around and said, and this is for your personal stuff.
Yes.
It's very, very well designed. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So that was a pretty nice chat with Valina, and I was pleased to be able to record that for you guys. I really was impressed with the Kata camera bags, and I can't wait to get a hold of one or two of these to bring you a full review. From what I saw, they're light, well-designed and well-made. And as Valina said, they design their bags first and foremost around the person that is the photographer and not around the gear. And I really think that they're onto a winner. Here's something else that's really cool too. If you go to the Kata website, and you know it's that's kata-bags.com, by the way, and you click on the photo link that they have there, you'll see their photo bag navigator. And here you can narrow down your choices with a number of variables. And the thing that I found most cool was that they list most laptop models from all of the main manufacturers. I have an Acer 9620, and I could quickly see which bags that I could choose from if I wanted to carry my laptop as well as my camera gear. And I can tell you that, you know, the HB 2007 backpack style bag is looking pretty tempting. I don't carry my laptop that often though, and for when I also, you know, I won't be carrying so much of my gear around, the new 3N1 -33 that Belina showed us is, I think that's the one she was wearing in the exposition in the photo that I posted on the blog as well. That's totally amazing. The way you can wear and carry the bags in so many different configurations, and the layout of the pockets for quick access to your camera gear and lenses, as well as the space for your and quick access to your personal belongings, is pretty awesome. I actually didn't have much time to walk the floor at the CP Plus show because I'd registered to attend 3 Canon seminars that turned out to be just down the road, about a 10-minute walk down the road from the show in a different building. I had maybe another 30 minutes after talking to the Kata folks, so I continued to walk around and looked at the light panels which were available, including ones with white balance control on the back, which was pretty impressive. Just turn a knob to change the white balance of the light coming out of it. I found that they could also be controlled by a central control unit rather than going to each light, which obviously that's very handy. It didn't seem possible though to control them from a laptop PC or anything like that. So, you know, I thought that it would have been much better than making the user buy a separate control unit, but I guess that's a good marketing strategy for you. I left the exhibition hall just after midday, and I grabbed a sandwich at the convenience store and walked the 10 minutes down the road to the Canon EOS movie seminars, which were to be held at the Brillier Short Shorts Theatre. The first seminar I watched was from a photographer and videographer named Jumonji Bishin, and for the most part I'd seen the video that was being displayed, and although beautiful, I started to feel a little bit disappointed that I'd left the exhibition for the seminar, because it was really just for a while was just rehashing stuff that I'd already seen. It's already been published. It's in the ether, as it were. Then Bishin started to talk about his experiences when Canon first came to him with the 5D Mark II, when it was still in prototype. Apparently they'd asked him to take the camera out and get some photographs for their marketing, to show how good the camera was. And before he left, they said, kind of like as an aside, by the way, this camera can shoot full high definition video. And if you have time, they said, can you just get a few video clips as well? Because Bishin has a lot of experience with video and has used film HD cameras for a number of years, he said that he was excited initially because he immediately realized that, you know, the full-size sensor in the 5D Mark II would give him a much the ability to shoot with a much shallower depth of field compared to even the largest 35mm film HD video cameras. And, you know, they're basically the sensors or the film frame is half the size. He also said that he simply couldn't stand digital HD cameras because the sensors are so ridiculously small. He went on, though, to show us what is probably the first DSLR video shot in the world, outside of the what the Canon R&D team would have obviously been shooting during the development and testing of the camera. It was a small patch of equinox flowers in the rain. It was simply 15 to 30 second long clip that he says he just shot between shooting stills to see how it looked. And it turned out to be one of the most beautiful videos, what I call moving stills, that I've ever seen. The way the rain hit the long tendrils of the equinox flowers, making them bend down and then spring back up again, and the light from the background, everything was amazing. I love shooting in the rain myself, so it was maybe more responsive to this, but it really was a beautiful clip, and to see it on a full-size movie theatre screen was great. I've been shooting sort of moving stills for a while now, and have a number of them from Hokkaido as well that I'll share with you soon. But having already gotten the bug to start doing more of this, after being inspired by one of this year's Hokkaido workshop participants, I really enjoyed this clip, and I started to feel happy that I'd attended the seminar now. After all, it was getting the video bug during the Hokkaido trip that made me decide to sign up for these seminars, and I've actually just placed an order with B&H for that Manfrotto fluid head and some other things from Really Right Stuff to hopefully rig up my cameras so that I can drop them onto a video head easily without removing my RRS plates. I use the Arca Swiss type plates on all of my cameras and lenses, and I really don't want to be taking those off to put video head plates on. So I'm going to try and do a bit of rigging here to get this working. Of course, my main focus will remain stills, but I hope that you aren't going to mind too much if I talk a little bit about video in the coming months as I get more into this. The second seminar that I attended was called the EOS Movie Practical Techniques from a Pro Photographer. Or pro photographers. There's no plural in Japanese, so I'm not sure which one they meant. These guys spent a lot of time talking about the new plugin for Final Cut Pro that will basically enable people to convert video to a better format for more quickly than has been possible so far. It basically converts the video on import. And it seems to really cut the time down. So good move from Canon there. They also spoke about the new firmware that's been released today, actually, which converts the video from 30 frames a second to 29.97 or whatever it is. I forget exactly what it is. And also adds 25 or 24 frames per second. So I know a lot of people have been waiting for that, and they spoke a little bit about that as well. One of the takeaways was seeing how they used live view on a laptop PC and a second HDMI monitor coming straight out of the camera to accurately focus and view the video stream on a large screen as they shot. And I hadn't realized that you can attach something like they showed us the Manhattan 8.9 inch HD monitor screen. And I didn't realize that you could attach something like that to the camera. I've really not looked into a lot of this so far. But basically, you can use that as a live view. And although I knew that you could use live view on a laptop using EOS utilities, I hadn't really thought of using this for video until now. So this was some good information for me. Probably my biggest takeaway here was when they showed some 60 FPS video played back at 30 FPS. And I knew about this technique. That wasn't anything new. Obviously, it gets, when you play it back at 30 FPS, it's in like half speed, slow motion. But rather than looking like slow motion, it just had a dreamy feel to it. And I thought it was entirely down to the shallow depth of field being used. But then they said, and this was the big takeaway for me, but they said that this is how we view our memories. And basically what they mean is, when we look at something with interest and commit it to memory and then recall it later, it's played back to us slower than the actual scene was. And this clicked with me instantly. The footage that they showed seemed to me very much like the recollection of a precious memory. The last seminar that I attended was on tips and techniques from a music video editor, director. I almost didn't sign up for this one, and I almost wished I hadn't. There were a few things that I enjoyed, like watching how the director works with the photographer and seeing the gear that they were using. Again, they had the Manhattan HD monitors and PCs hooked up to the camera and using all sorts of gear to get their video footage. They also gave a lot of background information on the video that they did called The Passage, which you can see on the Canon website at the moment. They said that when they chose the young Italian model for this video, the agent told them that she had lots of video experience. And when they turned up shooting, they met her. She said that it was her first video job, which I thought was quite funny. Anyway, a relatively enjoyable afternoon. Although, Canon's handling of the logistics could have been better. And I wish it hadn't been so far from the main exhibition hall. So that basically I could have gone back. But in general, I'm pretty pleased that I went. My one complaint about the whole thing is that it's too short. The doors open at 10 a.m. and they close at 5. So if you want to attend some seminars as well, there really isn't enough time to talk to many of the exhibitors. I got to all of the stands that I was interested in, but if I'd had a few more hours, I could have looked at a few more of the stands in more detail to see if I could find any other hidden gems. But in all, I was pretty happy. So I hope that you enjoyed that, joining me for the first CP Plus in Pacifico, Yokohama. Before we finish, a quick note to let you know that spaces on the Antarctica workshop and exhibition that I mentioned a few weeks ago are filling up fast. If you're interested in joining me and David Burren for that, please do get your completed order form over to Aurora Expeditions as soon as you can. Remember that full details are available at our website, antarctica2010.com, and that's antarctica2010.com. Also, I've decided to team up with a tour operator to help with some of the logistics of my Snow Monkeys and Hokkaido workshops and tours in February 2007. So the announcement of the details is running a little late. If you're waiting for these details, I'm sorry for the delay, but I will be announcing the schedule and other information by the end of March or the first week of April at the latest. If you would like advance notice, then please mail me with either the contact form on my website or send an email to info@martinbaileyphotography.com asking me to put you on my workshop's mailing list. I intend to give people on the mailing list 48 hours head start on booking, so do let me know if you're interested. Well, thanks for listening today, and remember that you can find me on Flickr and Facebook as well as Twitter, and of course on my blog and the photography forum. All links are on the top page at martinbaileyphotography.com. I'll be back next week with another Martin Bailey Photography podcast, but in the meantime, you just have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Jeff Curto, and I hope you'll tune in to Camera Position, my podcast about the creative side of photography. As a 30-year professional photographer, I have long believed that the why of photography is a lot harder than the how. What do we do with it? How do we express ourselves? How do we continue to pursue our passion in photography? And that's what Camera Position is all about. Find me at cameraposition.com or on the Photocast Network. Thanks.
The Martin Bailey Photography Podcast is a proud member of the Photocast Network. Find this and other great photography podcasts at photocastnetwork.com.